You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Eurobash episode 34. We're back in your ears, back in your minds, back in your lives. Noel McGrath here with his cap on backwards.
Oh yeah, bank holiday weekend in Dublin, man.
Is that a cap on backwards kind of situation? Yeah, I say I'm going to turn this shit around
definitely.
Today.
It is. It's always on a bank holiday weekend. Tracksuit bottoms, hoodie, cap on backwards.
Represent.
Flip flops on.
This is the Southside casual.
Southside massive.
We had a big weekend with UFC. And obviously Bellator Birmingham going down. Let's take a quick look at these headlines. Donald Cerrone, after telling us all week that he doesn't want to fight Conor McGregor.
Yawn.
He said he wants to fight him July now.
I'm going to have a rant about that later.
Yeah, you absolutely can. We have space available for that. Darren Till's first public appearance at Bellator since his arrest. And he posted that sweaty video online after a training session. So he's back in our hearts,
weird.
Back in our minds. Amir Ali Akbari signs for UFC. This guy obviously had some issues with PEDs in the past. He had some world championships taken off him. He went to ACB. He looked very dominant. A good addition to that heavyweight division, if you ask me. Paul Craig v. Alonzo Menafield in June 29th. Another unbeaten prospect for Paul Craig. It's becoming his calling card. I think he's 3-2 in the UFC against unbeaten guys so far. So looking to make it 4-2. Looking forward to seeing that one, Big Paul. RCC 6 went down at the weekend. Alexander Shelomenko defeated Viscardi Andrade in the third round, and former Cage Warriors champion Jonas Bilstein got folded by Artem Frolov. Chris Fields v. Carl Albrechtsen is off.
Surprise, surprise, Peter, you did call that.
Yeah, and as I said last week, Fields is now calling for the fight to be on Rizin. It is a Rizin-worthy fight.
Definitely.
And, you know, we only had the champion, Jiří Procházka, on last week talking about how he doesn't really feel like Albrechtsen's ready for the title yet. So how about let him fight Fields, and if he gets through there, give him the title shot, you
definitely
know?
Definitely, do it. I think it's a great matchup, and obviously, you know, one for Chris as well. Who's
El Storco Blanco.
El Storco Blanco, yeah, returned. He'd come out in a stork suit. they love those in Japan, all that sort of...
Yes.
Pre-fight production and stuff. So, yeah, let's do it. I'd love to see it. It'd be great for Chris as well. Obviously, a long-time fan of Rizin and Pride and all that. So yeah,
it's the seventh of nine opponents that have pulled out on him over the last few years.
Yeah, it's mad. That's crazy. And we've obviously been through a lot of that sort of process here in Dublin as well. A number of those opponents, a couple of Bama events. I think Chris had to pull out of one as well. He was medically pulled from one. Very frustrating.
He was pissed off about that too.
Oh, but yeah, man.
That was something to do with his neck, remember?
Yeah, there was from a guillotine. Carotid archery in his neck. There was a slight blockage. But listen, I suppose safety first anyway. But frustrating all the same for Chris. But yeah, listen, let's hope that happens. That'll be a cool one.
I really hope it does. And it's good to see so many people get behind an Irish MMA legend there online. So if you haven't already got onto that, you should do it. It would be great to see an Irish guy in Rizin. I'd love to see that. Finally, I don't know if you saw the pictures yet, but Casey and Esther got married, and it looks like an amazing event.
Yeah, I only saw it this morning.
With the championship titles. Oh, man, they're the best. They're the coolest couple around. So I wish them many happy years.
Likewise.
I know they're going to have a fantastic adventure together. They already have.
It'll be like our adventure, Petey.
It's very much like our adventure. So, we didn't get to speak to Jack Hermanson last week. So that was top of my list, to-do list this week. And thank God the Joker got on to speak to us about that fantastic win over Jacare Souza. We talked about that ridiculous guillotine entry he's pulled off 3 times now. He talked about, in his post-fight press conference, he wants to fight whoever the UFC think will get him to a title. So we discussed the outlook at 185. You know, Chris Weidman came out and he says, I want to fight him.
Yeah, and funny enough, we talked about it last week and I quoted the tweet and Chris liked it. So
yeah, but this is the opponent that Hermanson was calling for straight after the fight, right? Yeah. But now, since he's gone ahead of him in the rankings and no one was interested in him when he was behind him in the rankings, he said, no, he's second choice now.
Yeah.
So
he's number one.
Gastelum,
all right, well, or that's it, yeah.
Or Yoel Romero.
Yeah, they're the 3 we mentioned last week.
We also discussed a lot of people were pissed because, you know, and this is ridiculous. Greg Hardy got paid $150,000, and Jack would have to play $84,000.
Yes, that's a piss take. You know, it is a piss take. If you look at, you know, we often get, I don't know, you probably get them as well. The Nevada have to disclose a portion of state regulations and law. The wages and they are crazy. Some of them, like, you'd imagine some of these fighters, guys that you know a little bit better, will be getting massive bucks. But it's all about bargaining power and the agents. It's crazy
the amount of time Hermanson's put into this game. And I mean, it seems to be, as he explains in the interview, he seems to be coming up to a negotiation situation. Mm. I think after his next fight, he'd be able to negotiate. But geez, you'd want more than $80,000 to get in there with y'all, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, no, 100%. And I'm sure his management team will be on top of that now.
GB,
you know, bargaining for a greater and obviously extension to the contract for his next fight. So listen, he deserves it. He's put on some fantastic shows, and you know, as we said last week, any of those 3 fights I think really sort of propel him even further now up into contendership status. And when you're beating a guy like he did in Jacare in the fashion in which he did, listen, you're ready to nearly get in there and go for a title shot.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. So we're going to talk to Jack now. We'll be back in about 10 minutes. MMAfighting.com, and I am joined by Jack Hermanson, coming off his fantastic win over Jacare Souza last week. Jack, you've had a week to process this now. I don't know if you've been home yet, but just tell me, if you can put it into words, what the reaction has been like to that fantastic outing.
Yeah, I'm back home now. The reactions has been amazing, you know. A lot of new followers, a lot of new fans, and everybody from before, you know, everybody supporting me and writing to me and congratulating me. And, you know, it feels great. I really got the response that I was looking for, and I'm enjoying a top spot position right now. So I can't wait to see what's next.
It felt like a very intense moment, even when we saw you walking out there. How does it feel to kind of, you know, you had so many people before this fight saying, oh no, he can't go to the ground with Jacare, he's not able for this, blah, blah, blah. To walk out there and dominate him on the ground and in the standing exchanges, I mean, it must feel good.
Yeah, it felt great. And, you know, talking about the ground game, I would love to, you know, get into the ground even more than I was able to do in the fight, you know. But I've been reflecting over the fight, and I'm happy with it. But, you know, you're always critical towards yourself because you want to be even better, you know. So I watched that fight, and I can see that some of my takedown attempts are, like, a little bit far away. So if I would have been doing a little bit of better setups, I probably would have had it on the ground even more, actually.
Well, it felt like to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt like to me that you not only showed that you weren't afraid to go to the ground with him, you made him reluctant to go to the ground with you. That's how
I
felt.
Yeah, true. Especially when, you know, after his first shot, when I was going for the guillotine, you know, after I hit him a little bit in the first round, and he panicked and shot, and I went for the guillotine. After that, you know, he didn't want to shoot anymore, and so I think At least he didn't want to end up under me, you know.
Yes, yes. And that guillotine entry, I've seen it now twice. I saw it against Branch and I saw it against Jacare. I'm no ground wizard, but I did train jiu-jitsu for a while and I've never seen that kind of entry before. Where has this come from?
It comes from my trainer, Eduardo Tetarios, my jiu-jitsu coach. It was actually the first move that he taught me in my first practice with him. So it's pretty cool that he's getting some recognition now. I actually finished the fight before David Branch as well with the same move.
The same looping arm, the way it comes in, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how I didn't recognize. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was the first round victory as well against Gerald Merchard. Mm. So that's one of my favorite moves now, and you know, if somebody gives me the opportunity, I'm gonna go for it 100%.
Well, and you know, it seems like it's done exactly what you wanted it to do, in that I feel the fact that Chris Weidman has come out and accepted your challenge, that shows how your status has changed. So yeah, it was very hard for you to get fights against recognized guys, and now guys are saying yes because they know you're the guy with the momentum now, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they can see me coming in there, and they want to test themselves against me. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the UFC thinks and who I'll get next.
How happy are you to see that, though, to see Weidman come out and say he wants that fight? Because is he one spot ahead of you in the rankings at the moment?
No, he's one behind me. Oh. So actually, it would have felt better if it was Gastelum or Romero accepting the fight. So, you know, Weidman, now I'm a little bit picky now, but he's my, like, you know, he's not my first choice, you know.
Wow.
I would love to fight I think Calvin Gastelum and Joel Romero, but I think Joel Romero, you know, he was supposed to fight Paulo Costa, so I think those two will fight. And Gastelum, you know, he just fought, so he probably wants a break, just as I do. And I think we both could agree on a fight this fall. That would be perfect.
Yeah, so you are comfortable taking some time off, Jack. That's been a big problem for you, getting you to just sit down on the couch for a little while, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, I can feel my body now. It's pretty beat up, and I just watch my calendar, you know, and I see that I have a lot of things to do this summer, you know. Always when you have a fight book, you're just pushing things forward all the time, and, you know, it's some time that I travel to Sweden and visit my family and my relatives and so on. So I have a couple of things to do, so it's perfect with a break right now, and then I can increase my training in the end of the summer and get a new fight in the fall. That would be perfect.
Yes, and I mean the fact that you put out on social media today that you would like the winner of Romero or Costa.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that fight is happening right now. There's no it's not set in stone, right?
Yeah, so especially after there's been a little bit of controversy in there, you know, and so we will see. It might be that I'm fighting one of those guys instead.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't the first time. The reason why I'm focusing on Romero is a guy that is perceived to be so avoided. People think that fighters don't want to fight him, and I think before you did what you did to Jacare, he was considered a guy who was avoided an awful lot as well. But, you know, the fact that Costa isn't matched up with Romero right now, that isn't set in stone. I mean, if the Romero fight was made available, do you feel like, as you said in your press conference, do you feel like Romero is the guy that gets you to the title? Because that's what you want, the guy who gets you to the title, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why I want to fight him. It's not because I think he's an easy fight, because I think he's probably the hardest fight for me out there. But I know that if I win against or I win over him, you know, you can't deny me a title shot. That's just how it works. You know, he's the man to beat. That's why I want to fight him.
I got to ask you, this is something that came up an awful lot afterwards. As you know, the purses are made available for the public to consume, and a lot of people were annoyed by the fact that, you know, Greg Hardy came away with more money from that event from you. He got 150K, I believe yours was 84. But yeah. I know this is quite a personal question, but I mean, is that annoying to see a guy like you who's put in so many years, who's one of the best middleweights in the world, clearly, after that performance? Is that annoying for you?
Not too much, you know, but I feel like I have still one more fight on my contract now. And because, you know, I'm still under the same contract, so should I be able to win the next fight, I'm going to be in a position where I can negotiate a lot, you know, a contract that's going to be far better than the one I have right now. It's a little bit easy to, you know, just because that my rise lately has been pretty quick, you know.
Yes.
So I think that I deserve more now, obviously. So I think there is, we need to negotiate a new contract, and that one will be better, and I will be better paid.
Yeah, because you want to have the big books to be taking on the guys at the top of the division, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, if you're up there with this kind of caliber guys, you certainly deserve a good pay.
So, I mean, I'm asking you to kind of look into your crystal ball a bit here, Jack. I know you said you want some time off, and we don't know what's going on Romero and Costa at the moment. You've got Adesanya, you've got Whittaker, who looks like they're going to fight. Who do you think will be next? You know, if everything went according to plan, if you got exactly what you wanted, what would it be?
Exactly how I wanted it. That's you know,
it doesn't happen an awful lot in this sport, right?
No, it doesn't. It's hard to think like that. I think that, you know, what we know is that Israel and Whittaker will fight.
Yes.
And the guy that's ranked the highest is Romero. You know, so that's, you know, if I could fight him in this fall, that would be perfect. If not, then, and what I feel is the most,
biggest reward.
Yeah, that's definitely Romero. But I feel like Gastelum is probably the fight that I have the feeling that fight is going to happen, you know. I feel like that's a fight that the UFC could be willing to set up. So I have a feeling that that's the next one.
So Gastelum, do you think if you were, say, it was as impressive as you did against Jacare there, let's be honest, the reaction to this is just crazy. So say you went in there and did that against Gastelum again, something similar, something with the same kind of impact, do you think that would result in the championship date, or do you expect to fight two more times before you go and fight for the title?
It could possibly give me a title shot, but you know, you don't wanna, you know, I don't wanna be disappointed either, you know.
Yeah.
So that's it, you know. So if they're not promising me anything, you know, I will take it for granted, because that's my goal for sure, and I know that I will reach it somehow. But I feel like, you know, a maximum two fights away from a title shot for sure. If not after the next one, then not the one after that. It might depend a little bit on my performance as well. You know, if it's super dominant and I get a good momentum, they might give it to me. And, you know, if it's a closer fight, they might want to give me one more fight for the title. So I think that's fair.
Absolutely. Jack, thank you so much for giving us time, all the time. We really appreciate it, and I can't wait to see what's next. And I do hope you get some time off. I don't want you accepting any fights for June 1st now, before the next time I speak to you.
I'll be there in Sweden, but I'm going to be watching and enjoying the fights
from okay. outside. Okay, brilliant. Enjoy some time off, Jack, and thank you again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much to Jack Hermanson for joining us. I'm so excited about what's going to happen next for him. You know, it's crazy seeing like one fight basically, you know, result in everything that this guy's been asking for to emerge at the top of this division. And I think a big nod to how his stock has grown is the fact that, as I say to him in the interview, is the fact that Chris Weidman's now saying, oh yeah, I like the sound of that fight. They wouldn't talk about this guy before, you know?
Yeah, they wouldn't. And I think they have to because of that performance. It was a dominant performance against Jacare.
Crazy.
And we've talked, obviously, about, you know, Jacare is obviously on sort of, you would say he's coming off the top of the hill from his career, but still, you know, massively dangerous guy.
He could get in there with anyone in that top 15 and cause him a lot of trouble. He'll easily beat them.
No one wants to get in there with him at the moment. No. After that performance and after what we've seen, how good his ground and pound game is, how versatile he is, how dynamic he is on his feet. He can bring the fight really wherever he wants to bring it. And we saw that against Jacare. We saw every sort of facet, every utilization of what he's good at. We saw him up against the cage, the gritty, grindy style in the second and third rounds. And obviously kicked on and later, and he can go five now as well. So it's a big plus and advantage for him to have that in his locker and be able to know he can go those five rounds as well. I think is a massive factor and something that I think we're just going to see a lot more from Jack in the next year.
A young man too, so that's obviously going to bode well for him in that division. Let's take a look at what happened last week. UFC Ottawa, that was the kind of highlight of the weekend for a lot of MMA fans. Donald Cerrone, fantastic fight, fantastic display. I love dad mode Cerrone, by the way, but the only points I'll take away is returning to the McGregor situation. Like, I mean, I think
it was cringeworthy.
I think when you have a win like that, when you have so much public adoration, you can really make something happen there. And I just don't feel like the Conor fight is still an option, you know?
I totally agree with you. And I think when it's almost to a point where he's begging for it now, it looks a little bit pathetic in my opinion. I think we saw it with Paul Felder as well. There was a lot of talk in relation to, you know, oh, the Conor fight, it must be... No, like, there is a lot more. No offence to you, Donald. You've come back. You're two fights back in the UFC lightweight division after your little stint, unsuccessful stint at welterweight.
It wasn't that unsuccessful.
It was unsuccessful. Look at his record. That's what it's all down to, PT, at the end of the day. Records, and if you're winning fights. And he didn't win a lot of fights at welterweight, right? But if you look at the UFC lightweight division, we have so many fights at the top of that division that we have yet to see and potentially may never see. And these guys are ahead of Cowboy Cerrone, in my opinion. You have, obviously, Khabib, Conor, Gaethje, Poirier, Holloway, Ferguson. These guys need to sort out that little mix in there before throwing Donald Cowboy Cerrone in there. And I think that's fair to say. I think we've waited so long to see a lot of these fights. Like, you know, Ferguson, McGregor. You know, you have the Holloway rematch. Holloway back at 155.
You're reading notes out of your phone here.
No, I'm just looking at the fucking picture. I'm actually looking at the picture of the guys because I can never remember everyone's fucking names. There's so many fuckers. But,
and I hear this Conor McGregor has a big future.
You know what I mean, though? I think throwing him in there and it just puts another person in the mix that's probably not there in my eyes yet to be considered in that elite. He's had his chances before in the past. I know he's looked different. He's looked
right. Who do you put him in with, though?
Good. Edson Barboza part two. Why not? Let's see it again. That was a fight that happened years ago, and I think Edson's obviously evolved a lot since then. And let's see that test, because you have other guys ahead of him, and you know he's not going to fight his buddy Paul Felder. That was a potential fight. Paul, I think, should go throw down against Justin Gaethje. I think if we're going to see Khabib and Dustin, I think we should see Conor and Tony towards the end of the year. And
what about Kevin Lee?
Kevin Lee's going to welterweight.
Is so, he though, definitely?
Yeah, well, he's fighting.
Because he keeps saying that and then
fight. No, but the fight's booked.
Oh, is it? Yeah,
it is booked. He's fighting, Jesus, double check there. He is. He's a fight booked anyway for, I think it's next month sometime. And there's talk of, you know, obviously Kevin's finding it very hard, I think, to make that weight still. 155 pounds. We've seen a few cuts where he hasn't been great. So if you look at, you know, sort of the dimension, you know, because we're not going to really ever get...
Oh, Dos Anjos,
that's right. We're not going to get any, you know, clear movement in terms of who's where and who's ranked where until we sort out the guys in the top six. And Cerrone's not there.
That's proved to be a very, very difficult thing to do.
I know, but, you know, like, I agree with you, but there's other guys ahead of him that other fights need to be booked instead of him being thrown
in the mix. Yeah, I just don't see... I tell you, I just don't see the McGregor thing working out, because there's too much money from a Diaz rematch. There's too much money for Khabib rematch. Yeah. It's just he pales in comparison to that. And let's be honest, when you are Conor McGregor, you are the UFC, you want to bring him back for the biggest fight available, and he is 100%. Not the biggest fight. It's as simple as that.
He isn't the biggest fight, and I think even to a certain extent now, I think a lot of people are more interested in seeing the Ferguson fight ahead of that.
Yeah, maybe so. What did you think of that co-main event? Because a lot of people did not enjoy it one bit.
It was absolute garbage. And I think we said it last week
that we did predict
Elias Teodoro just makes fights crap. He really does. Like, let's be honest about it. Like, he seems like a nice guy. He likes his hair, you know, looks good. Doesn't clearly want to get hit in the fights the way he fights. He's, you know, off the back foot. Very telegraphed in his movement when he tried to go forward too. I'm sure Derek Brunson was very, very frustrated in that fight. And I was glad to see Derek get the win because he pushed the pace, tried to win the fight. It's guys like that you could see Elias Teodoro being cut.
And it was like Teodoro's big chance to kind of establish himself in that middleweight picture. And it just didn't happen for him.
And I think he's one of these guys, even on a winning streak, you know, I know he's lost that fight, but he's one of these guys, even on a winning streak, that could be cut from the UFC just because the style of his fighting.
It was a really big reaction. Like, I mean, the amount of people that were talking about this was unbelievable. Dorinho was talking about, even saw, as we'll talk to later on, and he did comment on this fight, Marvin Vettori, like, he was making stories about it going, is this for real? You know,
it'd
be like you watching me playing rugby.
Yeah, but he was so telegraphed as
you'd
well.
Be like, that's them lineouts are shite, mate.
But did you see how predictable his shots were as well? It was a really strange performance. And I was happy for Derek Brunson because
absolutely,
you know, he's bored the shit out of me in that fight.
Cub Swanson, could it be Cub Swansong next?
I was just about to say that.
My God.
Yeah, I don't know where one of those judges got that fight 30-27 for Swanson. He needs a good slap.
Are people getting, like, did he get confused as the one who's
Yeah,
watching?
I think he might have wrote
Burgos
down the wrong thing.
Is fucking huge.
Big boy.
Jesus Christ. That was terrifying, the size of that fella.
You might have given the third to
came out
to
hot,
Swanson.
Yeah. But
first
Burgos had a good
was
end
easy.
Of that round too, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. But the first and second were, you know, it was easy for me. Good technical fight. You just wonder how much more Cub has to offer in the tank. And, you know, maybe you can argue even that he should have retired a couple of years ago. But, you know,
These young guys look seriously hard work. You know, what do you do? Do you put him in there with Rodriguez? Do you put him in there? Like, you know what?
I like that.
Well, like, he's far on the bounce. Like, why not put him? Like, the last time we saw Yair take a big step up, he wasn't ready for it. Yeah. Everybody knows it against Edgar. But maybe this is the time to test him against a guy who's been established in the featherweight.
The fight against the Zombie was, you know, I think that is that progression. And you throw Burgos in there and give Burgos a bit of a test as well. That's a fight that I think a lot of fans would like to see. That's a good show, PT. I like that one.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
PT Shelby.
Divalashvili, he really took it to Katona. No Kavanagh in Katona's corner. Obviously, Kavanagh was in Bellator Birmingham. Brian. But this is, we have seen this before. Like, I mean, do you think fighters, remember Artem fought Cub and John didn't go to it?
Yeah.
You know, he had other engagements. Do you think that's a real put-off for fighters when the coach isn't there, or is it not a big deal? Because, I mean, Katona probably has a different crowd in Canada as well because he was there for so long, you know? But,
yeah, no, I think it obviously isn't, you know, the most favourable of circumstances not to have your coach in your corner, but it obviously can't be helped. Brian's been with John a lot longer. Brad's only been there two fights. So, yeah, listen, I don't think that should be a really major issue. But it was a performance where he got beaten and beaten well.
Yeah, Divalashvili is just so weird, man. He's throwing the kitchen sink at you from the word go, and then as soon as you open up, he's on you.
Yeah, he took him down a load, and it was one of those fights where I think Katona, you know, fair play to him for sticking in there till the end, but it was a long night for him.
Yeah, it was. Wald Harris absolutely battered Sergei Spivak. Bad debut for him, but
Walt, not Disney.
I will say. Look how Pavlovich turned things around in a second UFC. Yeah, he came. He went in against Alistair Overeem, got starched, and then he came back out and looked brilliant in his sophomore outing in Russia there last time out. So, look, a champion coming into a new division, I think it's daunting. I think the perils of heavyweight for a guy coming in from the outside the UFC is the talent pool isn't that deep. Yeah, so they could be thrust into a level of opponent that they've never even seen before in their life. And Harris proved that was the situation for Spivak. But maybe, you know, that experience will stand to him in his next outing, as we saw with Pavlovich. But definitely not the debut he wanted, and a good win for Walt. The only other European interest in the card was Nordin Tlaib, and he got a dominant victory over Kyle Probolik. You know, I'm sure Neymar will give him the weekend off now for him.
Is he still working with Neymar? Do we know that?
No, but I like that narrative.
Yeah, so do I.
So I'm going to go with it. So Neymar probably on the phone to him straight afterwards. Oh, can't wait till you're home.
Get over.
I feel very insecure.
Little footballer millennials.
Do you reckon he gets canned if Neymar goes to Real?
Yeah, no.
No, do you reckon he's brought in?
I'd say Tlaib is the kind of guy that speaks Spanish as well.
I'd say Tlaib wears a polo neck very well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And an earpiece
and a gold chain
and
around it.
A pair of black sunglasses
and a gold chain around it as well, and a big Rolex watch.
Yeah, all that shit. Yeah, I'd
like
say
black. You could just pick. I'd say probably of, you know, one of those short, like short sleeveless yeah. polo necks. The black. It's very predictable what he's going to wear.
Do you think he makes more money from being Neymar's girl?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So you 100%. Could, every time he's getting in there, he's doing it for us. He's doing it for the love, guys.
That's it. That's what a lot of guys are doing it for. I guarantee you, Neymar was paying him fucking more. Like, I don't think we can even need to even have that conversation.
Yeah, it's a true story. Let's get on to Bellator Birmingham. There were so many call-outs. I tried to list as many as I could.
Where did you watch it?
I watched it in my gaff.
Did you watch the main card online?
Oh, sorry, a bit of interruption there. I said something there.
You tuned in Channel 5, did you?
Yes.
All right, okay. I couldn't get Channel 5. I have a great bit of
hardware there that helps me get this kind of thing. They sell them at Ferry House Market. Bellator Birmingham, yes. The main event, I mean, that must be absolutely soul-destroying for Tim Wild. Brent Primus go-go platters him in the first minute. I mean, that is one of the rarest submissions that you can achieve.
Yeah, 100%.
We all remember Nick Diaz doing his attack on Origami back in the day, and it was like everyone's head exploded. And for a guy as muscled as Brent Primus to do that was absolutely unbelievable.
His muscles would pop off.
Yeah, me heart went out to Tim Wild, though. I mean, that's, you know, to get finished by an incredibly rare submission in the first minute, basically, you know. And he did look like he stung Primus with a right hand just before that ground sequence started. But as soon as he went down to meet Primus on the ground, Primus was working for that go-go platter. I know he went for this an awful lot against Chandler in the last fight. But a tough one for Tim. You know, when you get that big step up, you know.
We said last week it was going to be a little bit too much, and it proved that way, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. In the co-main event, Fabian Edwards with a fantastic knockout. Two up kicks, stands up, right, left.
Is he ready for a world title shot, man? You feel like he's not far away.
Well, just the one thing I'd say, like, and this is no slight on Fabian or his management team, because I know they were looking for the toughest fights available, but it's tough when you go in there against Chadwick, who had a great win, we'll get onto that. When it's tough when you go in there against a Chadwick and you have that kind of performance, and then the level of opponent drops rather than increases.
True.
You know, in all fairness to Flacco Neto, he nearly has an even record now after that loss. He's 11-10 now. Fabian, like that's the one. Like, I mean, all respect to Jude Sammy, he's a great, great matchmaker, but you need to consistently build these guys. The way to keep the public's appetite there is to keep on giving them new challenges. But so they're like going, what's going to happen here, rather than, well, Fabian's going to win the first round.
Is the problem not for Fabian here that he can't get matches? And that's the issue, that he's going to have to make that step up, whether he's ready for it or not, because guys, you know, he's finding it very hard to get matched against opponents. That's probably an issue as well for the promotion.
But I just don't see why Mike Shipman and Koslov and Steenis are matched for June now. Like, I don't think, if they're taking that kind of fight, why wouldn't they take Fabian? Maybe the Birmingham thing was an issue.
Yeah.
But look, we need to see to make the public really want this, because I felt there was a lack of anticipation for this card in the lead up to it.
Massively compared to the other European cards, massively.
And you've got to give him a fight that you're kind of going, Jesus, how's he going to get on here? And look, that's incredibly hard because he looks unbelievable.
I think they should have held him out and put him on the London card. Yeah. And bumped up the London card a little bit more.
Put Shipman and Edwards on.
Why not?
Because, I mean, they're getting rid of they're putting two prospects together anyway with Van Steenis and look. Whatever. I just hope we see that steady build. I know that's what Fabian wants, because that's how you make money in this game.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. And I think if we look at the London card, the excitement already, there seems to be that buzz around it with James and Gegard on the card as well.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be like the traction that Dublin card did here, which was absolutely insane. It was mental. So I'm looking forward to that one. Big time.
Yeah. Taking a look further down the card, Pedro Carvalho, we'll talk to him later on. This was the performance that this guy needed. An absolutely brilliant performance against Derek Campos in his 15th Bellator fight. Pedro, I went down to the gym I went down to the gym to interview Brian Moore ahead of this fight, and Pedro was there, and he had this crazy look of intensity, and I had yet to know he had taken on this fight. And then it all suddenly makes sense the next day when I get wind of it. I'm like, okay. You know, he looked fantastic, I think. When you see James Gallagher and Brian Moore getting behind his request to be in that featherweight tournament, it shows you that the whole gym is behind this guy. Let's get him going. Only 23 years of age.
Is that all he is?
Everybody thinks he's about 42.
He looks about 50, yeah.
Yeah, everybody, we clarified this again. I told him he's going to have to post a picture of his passport to convince the masses. But Raymond Daniels had somewhat exciting Bellator debut.
Unreal, man. Like, you're watching that stuff, it's like computer game stuff. That's one of the best knockouts. Just to have the mind and the mental intelligence to feint your leg in the air and then drop your arse to the ground and then throw a dig. It was just sensational. I was blown away by looking at that.
I was screaming.
Oh, I was just, what the fuck? Look at this.
Yeah,
it was one of those. Amazing, amazing moment. But it will be very interesting again to see if he can deal with a higher level mixed martial arts
opponent. I know, but it's his opponent. All right, yeah, it's his debut.
No, I agree, 100%. But I think we just have to say that anyway.
Yeah, well, I think the problem for me is if you're looking at this in terms of a contest, you are putting two guys into an MMA fight. One's the greatest kickboxer of all time. Yeah. The other one's like a regional kickboxer.
I'm a better kickboxer than both of them.
No, but do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know. There's only, like, there's pretty much one outcome, and we saw it the other night, and it was fantastic. But just for a bit. A bit of fantasy matchmaking here for Raymond Daniels. We're not going to worry about the right step up. What's the fight you want to see right now? I'll tell you mine.
Go.
Dylan Danis.
Oh, do it for the crack. Do it for the crack.
It makes no sense whatsoever if you're Bellator, but just do it, lads.
Do it. Jiu-jitsu head against the kickboxer. Yeah, it's the classic. Let's see it.
That would be
cool. I'm down with that shit. I'm definitely down with that shit.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a hold of Raymond. I wanted to interview him about that miraculous KO.
He doesn't like you after last week.
How does he just do it all the time, though? I mean, every time, if you watch any of his fights, it's like that, you know? It's just...
My mic is falling over here, sorry.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But let's take a look at some more of these matchups. What do you think of Joe Warren v. Brian Moore? He talked to our boy Shawnee Betts and Steve.
there's a 50-year-old now in Joe Warren. Joe's an old dude. What is he, 43?
But a good scalp.
100% a good scalp. I'm down with it if Joe wants to do. I think Joe last fought in October, November, something like that. I'm not sure. But I think that would be a really, really good scalp, a really good way to maybe introduce Brian to further, maybe into an American audience. And, you know, if he does really want that push for the world title at 135 pounds, no better way to start it than to beat a vet and a hard ass like Joe Warren.
We see that SBG guys are kind of given prominent places in Bellator. Do you believe that Carvalho will get that tournament space on the back of that? Because,
well, I think he has to, because, you know, brilliant. We talk about last week how experienced Campos is.
Mm.
When you're putting away a guy like that and doing it in putting on a performance like that as a 23-year-old, if they're looking at future prospects, look at his record in Bellator as
well. He's already done Daniel Crawford.
Like. That's what I mean.
He should have got more respect after that.
Put him on the card, give him a good placement in that tournament. Yeah.
What about those body kicks? The noise off him. Jesus Christ. Chandler v. Primus Tree. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Dom Wooding v. James Gallagher. I'm a bit confused about this one because Dom was fighting a featherweight. I think he said his time with bantamweight's done. And James Gallagher is definitely a bantamweight now. You know?
Yeah.
And as well, two...
Wooding look great.
Two red-hot prospects. You know, what do you put them together?
No, and
guys that have... Like, there's no need to push them now. They're still very young.
Can I ask a question now? I know James is coming off... Is it? We're at a point now where we need to see James constantly.
I think Jeremiah Labiano is a good step up from his last fight. I think Dom Wooding is another step up again. Look,
Wooding's amazing.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a great.
He's
great
unbelievable.
Fighter.
But I will say about the matchmaking there, Wooding's been taking on champions pretty much from his second fight. Yeah, to put him in against Khalsa was I knew what that was going to happen.
Yeah. No, I agree with
you. That's with the greatest respect to David Khalsa. I've seen him give a lot of lads trouble, including Keen Cowley. Yeah. But Wooding is the finished product as far as I'm concerned already. And he's just unbelievable to watch. And
what age is he, 23?
I'm not too sure what age he is. I've been watching him from a distance for a long, long time, and he's one of my favorite fighters to watch from his amateur days, because people were already, if you remember, when he was an amateur and Ryan Curtis was an amateur, they were trying to put them together for their pro debut.
In Nice FC, I think they were trying to make that fight happen.
Shinobi
or
one of them yokes,
I don't know. I think we're at a stage now, if James wins this fight against Labiano, where we have to see a significant push.
Yeah. Yeah, but is he in the same weight division? that's a serious issue.
Well, who knows?
Yeah. We'll have to see if Dom's willing to do that again.
But as for Brian Moore, I think it was a good way to get Brian back in there.
Well, he had the 15 minutes as well. Yeah, you know?
It'll all count to him.
And I'll tell you, it's exceptionally hard. I don't know if you ever grappled any rounds or boxed any rounds, but when somebody is just literally not giving you anything, they've decided from the first exchange, I'm going to lose this fight and I'm just going to defend.
Yeah.
Like, believe me, I was that guy in jiu-jitsu who just waited. I'm just waiting. Yeah. And I'm getting battered, but I know if I open myself up to attack the other guy, I'm going to take a risk and he's going to get me.
You could see when Brian had his back against the cage on the deck and he was just literally...
Yeah,
no, just cover risk up. risk control the whole time. Brian was finding it very difficult to get his hands out and land blows.
But he looked strong, he looked fit for the 15 minutes.
He did look really fit for the 15 minutes, and I think that's a big, big positive. Brian will like that, I think, that he's got three rounds in behind him now and the hands are okay. There's no injuries to the hands. I think it's very, very important from that point of view. But yeah, I think Brian will be a little bit disappointed he didn't get the finish in that fight. I think that... You know, a number of occasions, maybe he was a little bit hesitant. There was a knee, I think, there a number of times he could have thrown... down the chest, and I think he landed actually once and his opponent fell to the ground, but yeah, it's one of those ones where you just, I think, you get the victory and you move on.
Saul Rogers got a decision win over Aiden Lee. That was an incredibly tough fight for Aiden Lee in his debut.
Yeah, silly fight.
I thought it was. I mean, Saul Rogers dominated, you know. You know, Saul's one of the best guys
He's in the UK and Ireland. God knows, you know, how long,
he's been dying for this opportunity. I felt that was really tough matchmaking for Aiden Lee, who was making his debut.
I think Aiden should have, and we talked about it last week.
He's an outrageous talent.
Should have stayed around Cage Warriors a bit longer.
But these things happen. Yeah. Grant Crover Spillman. Kane Musa got a debut win over Matthew Pizork. It was Matthew gave him plenty of trouble early on, I tell you. And I think Kane has so many plates spinning. Like, he's an entrepreneur. He has so many businesses. He's involved in the music industry. He's involved in the fashion industry.
Yeah.
He's got so much going. And I think, you know, that probably showed him, like, you know, he probably thought he was going to go in there and take care of business very quickly. He went to 15 minutes, looked very fit, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, good debut, good signing for them, and off to a good start. Lee Chadwick gets a win over James Mulheron. A lot of people had this one for Mulheron. He seemed to have the slicker striking of the two, but Chadwick's forward momentum, and he wrestled him well up against the fence. He was definitely trying to stifle all those attacks, so that's a very close fight. Decision win for Chadwick, though. Yannick Bahati took care of business against Amir Dadovic, got the first round Kimura. We talked about Dominic Wooding's win over David Kalsa. Jimmy Wallhead continues his resurgence with Bellator. He's 2-0 now under the banner with a win over Giorgio Petrini. Gavin Hughes got the second round rear naked choke over Muhammad Yahya. And Ashley Reese got a gritty win over Craig Turner. Craig Turner 7-1. Ashley Reese 7-1. I'd be serving an all Craig Turner was. Ashley Reese 7-1 going into the fight. So tough fight there. Dave Castle got a win over John Nichols, a first round knockout. Akon Wanless looked fantastic against Sam Slater. He looks much improved since joining that Team Renegade. Disappointment for Sam. Obviously, he's gone to 2-2 now. That's a guy that a lot of people are hot on, so don't be surprised to see that fella have another run at it. Rafael Achigbu, fantastic debut, triangle choke in the first round over Lee Percival. Nicholas Solly got a KO out of nowhere, really, against Simon Ridgeway. And a draw started the night, which I thought Konstantin Gunsariev was robbed, that SBG fighter. I thought he won the fight fairly handily. Kieran Lister got the second round for me, but I thought Konstantin did enough. It ended in a draw. And that's all that we had from Bellator. Listen, how do you see the health of Bellator Europe at the moment, though? Like, I don't know how it's going, you know?
I'm a little bit...
I don't know if that event sold the way it intended to. I don't know. I know a few weeks out people were saying there was tickets. I know Fabian was posting that there was still tickets available. I mean, do you fear that this could possibly not go beyond the year?
With Sky, yeah.
Yeah, like, and I feel if Sky isn't there, will Bellator see the point in it?
No, but, well, you don't know with Bellator because they didn't have a TV deal for so long that... They might continue to piss against the wind, but they have to have a platform in place if they want this to continue. And I just don't feel at the moment there's a major amount of buzz for a lot of the cards.
Mm.
I think, obviously, the Dublin ones are huge. It was insane. It was amazing. And there was so much.
They could do two Dublin cards a year.
But that Dublin card did more traction, way more traction than UFC London.
Yeah.
Like,
well, for you at News Talk, who was an Irish publication.
Yeah, but I know, I think in general, if you look at, like...
No, not for us, no.
No, but no, I'm talking about in Europe here.
All right,
the interest here in
Europe
was nearly bigger than UFC London. And I think, you know, going forward, I think the June card, obviously, you need guys like James, you need guys like Musasi. But I just don't feel as though they have the big names in general to be able to continue this. I think what they should do, and this is for a long, long time, is space out their cards a lot more and promote them more and stack them harder and better, because there's a lot of, you know, dinosaurs on their ranks as well, sort of the upper weight classes. But I think that's what they need to do, and I just don't see the problem with that anymore. Like, why don't you promote the shit out of a card and, you know, starve and whet the people's appetites?
You don't think the European series was promoted?
Nah, a lot of bollocks.
Right. Yeah. I have to say, Gareth A. Davis was brilliant on the broadcast. Like, I mean, he actually brought a real bit of flair and personality to the whole situation.
What podcast?
I mean, sorry, not the podcast, right. The broadcast, right, I said.
Sorry. Fuck the podcast.
Aidan Power was on the broadcast. Do you know, from the RTE guy. Like, he used to do the Den and shit.
Why was he on it?
I don't know. Where's give Mike Sheridan a shout for that kind of stuff, you know? Oh, look,
give
at you.
Give a shout. Fuck off.
He'll work for Bellator.
Who's this guy? Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's shocking.
Paul Daly was very good. But
sorry, we talked about this one. That's terrible.
Do you want a job with Bellator?
Not really, but you're going, why? Who's this guy jumping on the bandwagon?
They should have got Mike Sheridan.
Oh, God.
He does live TV all the time. I mean, he just knows the sport a lot better. Aiden actually did well. He's very polished. But you could tell there was a lack of, you know, general knowledge on MMA, which Mike could be probably better at, as far as I'm concerned. But Gareth came in, he was kind of in and out, but as soon as he was in, you could tell Daly settled down a lot more, everybody's a lot more comfortable. And then what happened was, after the fights finished, lads just started walking straight up to Gareth, like, so they're coming out of the cage, and they were like, these impromptu interviews.
Man is Gareth.
Yeah, so it was good crack. I actually enjoyed that. I was saying to him there, I was talking to him today, and I was saying, you should actually get you in a little corner and have the fighters come out and just have a quick word with you, you know, outside the cage, but I suppose you can't double down on the interviews like that. Yeah, it was good. The event was good to watch. The main card was really good live. Like, I mean, look at the finishes you had. You had those up kicks. You had the Daniels crazy KO. You had Pedro absolutely blazing through someone, and then you had that Primus freak submission of Gogo Plata. So it went well. But yeah, I do agree with you. I feel like, you know, in Dublin, I had random people who just sports fans talking to me about this card, and I didn't have that ahead of this one. And I think perhaps with Fabian and a really really interesting fight there, I think a lot more people are kind of
I agree.
What about, like, I know Melvin Manoff's already on there, but what about a guy like that that's been around for years? Melvin Manoff's fighting in June, I believe. But, you know, give us something like that, because then we're like, we're going to see a tear up here, lads. That's Bellator Birmingham. We are going to go over to Pedro Carvalho, the man who has been imprinted in a lot of people's minds after that first round victory over Campos in Birmingham. He looked fabulous. He had that beautiful suit on him afterwards. I complimented him on that. And he just gives us a general sense of where he feels he is and what he feels he needs next to get himself into that tournament. So thank you very much to Pedro. We'll be back in about 15. MMAfighting.com, and I am joined by Pedro Carvalho, who's coming off his 2-minute disposal of Derek Campos at Bellator Birmingham on Saturday night. That's Pedro's third win in as many outings under the Bellator banner, and he is now calling for a place on Bellator's featherweight tournament, which looks likely to kick off in October. Pedro, my word, what a win, what a performance. How are you?
How's it going, sir? How's things?
That was absolutely incredible. I'll tell you a story. I was down in the gym interviewing Brian Moore a few weeks back, like many weeks back, and while I was there, someone kind of, I saw you training, and this crazy intensity about you, but it had yet to be announced that you had stepped up to the mark to fight Derek Campos. So I left the place going, my God, this man's so intense. And then next of all, we find out that this co-main event slot has come up. How long did it take you to accept that?
I never take more than 30 seconds to accept a fight. I never took longer than that, you know. Well, that was it. Like, my coach John Kavanaugh, he told me about this offer, and I just the only thing that I asked him about was if he thinks that with a win over Derek Campos, if I will get a good possibility in the tournament. He said absolutely, and I said, let's go, let's do it.
Yeah, and I feel like this is something that you've geared yourself towards for a very long time. I saw you doing interviews with Jerry McCarthy out in the Phoenix Park, talking about how you hope this would open up the opportunity to fight in the tournament. Was that always what was on your mind, as you said there, even before you accepted the fight, you were thinking about this? Has that been something you've been trying to guide yourself towards for a long time?
Yes, absolutely. Like, since I heard about it, was one of my targets, one of my goals, you know, be on the tournament, because it's straight away a direct opportunity to be world champion, you know, because absolutely. you just have to do your work, win the fights, and you get the belt guaranteed. So yeah, straight away, once I knew about the tournament, was one of my goals, you know. But there's so many high level featherweights, and even lightweights that can do featherweight, you know. And I knew it will be tough, and I knew that I needed something to make noise, to prove myself once again, you know. But at the time in February, I got the chance to fight against Brennan Gertz.
Yes.
And then the fight got canceled because my paperwork to my visa got late. And at the time was like really heartbroken for me. Like was one of the most disappointing thing that ever happened to me, you know. Especially because I was in my mind was like, this is it. This is going to be my moment because it's a big name and I'm not going to prove myself. And I see this chance like just go like that because of a piece of paper, you know.
It's crazy.
And but then I just thought about like, if this didn't happen, was because it's not meant to happen, you know. It's because something bigger, further going to happen. So I just embraced this thought, and I just went to the gym like I was in training camp, training hard, like I had some opponent, even if I didn't have it, but I was in camp. So once John told me about the Campos fight, I was like, man, this is it, this is my moment, you know. And I wasn't wrong about it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I know Campos, like, did you know when you saw Campos, this guy has fought in Bellator 14 times before, you know, you were going to face off, he has fought some of the biggest names under the promotional banner. Were you aware of all this as soon as they said that name to you?
Oh, yeah, like, when I was still a teen, like, it wasn't like a long time ago that I was a teenager.
yes, you're only 23, but, right?
I'm only 23.
Incredible.
Like, and I remember to be in Portugal. I remember to be in Portugal, seeing Bellator and seeing Campos fighting. You know, I was only a dreamer, a MMA fan, and I was seeing their Campos fights. You know,
yeah.
And it's crazy that a few years later, I was sharing the very same ring with him. You know. But that's only the reflection of my hard work, you know. Like, people say, like, when I say that I really, really work my ass every single day. Like, I'm not, like, telling this for the cameras or this. Like, I whoop my ass on the gym, you know, because I want this more than anyone. Like, I just, this is my life, you know. I sacrifice everything for this, you know. And I will not like let anyone, doesn't matter who is, point in front of my target, you know. If someone puts it in front of it, I just go through them, you know. No one gonna stop me to get the top.
Yes. And I mean, we're talking about this in terms of, you know, everybody now knows who Pedro Carvalho is after this fantastic performance.
I hope so.
yes. But did you feel as though Campos was kind of saying, who is this guy? Do you feel like he didn't expect that from you? Like, to go in there and get rid of him in 2 minutes and in the way that you did, so dominant. Do you think that took him by surprise? Because I know a lot of guys from the US, they don't have the highest opinion of some of the guys from Europe, you know?
Yeah, like I don't know what was his knowledge about me, you know, before the fight. Probably when they offered me, he saw some of my fights, but most likely he didn't know who I was, you know. But I always think, actually, like, I was thinking about this going to the fight, like, this guy, like everyone, like every single one of, basically every single one of my opponents, especially in Bellator, they all overlooked me. They all underestimated me. They were like, everyone on single level, from Daniel Crawford to even like Luca Vitali on Italy, they all thought that, okay, this is going to be a walk in the park. And man, if there's a wrong person that you can do that, it's me, you know? And I proved them wrong. And I believe that with Campos was a little bit the same. I believe that also he also took me serious, especially after the weigh-ins, you know. I made sure that my message passed. But he probably thought that he would be putting me away in one round or something. But and I took like that as my advantage, you know,
yes,
to take him like surprise, you know, because no one is ready for the pressure that I put, and I especially knew that he wouldn't like counting on that kind of pressure straight away. So I just capitalized, you know.
You know, when you have built this up in your head, the way that you did, and the fact that Brandon, that fight couldn't happen, and then you have this guy who's competed so many times in Bellator, how does that feel when you see him drop to the canvas? How does that feel when everything you've kind of visualized for so many weeks suddenly happens? How does that feel?
Like, oh, it feels great, you know. The feeling is great, but at the same time, it's just like it was another step. That's it. I didn't accomplish nothing. It's no time to celebrating because I'm still a contender. I didn't reach my goals. So, but yeah, like I don't know. Yes, I know. But when they offered me the fight, I felt straight away that I was about to put the best performance in my life. You know, and this camp was particularly like the camp itself was great, but at the same time was maybe the worst camp that I had in terms of little injuries. You know, every single week I was getting hurt in some spot. You know, nothing there were able to like stop me to fight, but was there. But in my mind, I was like, "This is gonna be the best performance in my life."
Do you feel it is when you look back on it?
It was. Absolutely, it was like the only thing that I have to point in what happened on that fight was he took me down and got my back was the only bad thing that I can say from my performance, because I think it's pretty clear that the performance was really, really good, you know.
The sound of those body kicks, man, that sound they made, it was crazy. It was like a baseball bat hitting someone.
Yeah, I know. Once of my main weapons, it's my left body kicks. I absolutely love them, but I didn't want to straight away shoot them because as I normally do it, I was like, maybe they study, maybe they already counting on. So I just took my time, especially because I've been focusing a lot on my boxing even more, you know, to get better and better and better. So I just like prefer to take my time on my boxing, try to read his timing, you know. And once he thought that we were like engaging in kind of a scrappy boxing thing, I surprised him with the body kicks, and that was happening, you know. And straight away when I landed the first, he wasn't even like able to hide it, you know. He was like doing noises, you know, and okay, I heard him.
Yes.
So I landed the second one, like to try to finish him, but like that's when you see like how good experience, you know, he is, because even when he was hurt, he was able to grab me and took me down, and I was like, oh shit! Like I was like, what I did a hooky mistake, you know, to rush too much in, but I just like took my time because I feel really good even with someone on my back. I knew that. It was like just a matter of time until I get back on my feet. And once I get back on my feet, I just thought, don't rush, you know, because I knew you were still hurt, but I was like, I'm not going to do the same mistake. So I just took my time, picked my shots, and once I landed the third body kick, I was like, that's it, you know.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I've got to ask you, because I felt your first win against Daniel Crawford was unbelievable. I was in London to watch that fight, and I can remember the way everybody was talking about Daniel ahead of that fight. And I felt like you should... Why doesn't Pedro now take that momentum from the Crawford win? But this one feels different for me. I saw you arrive out to press row in a beautiful, beautiful ensemble. Can you tell us a bit about that suit that you wore? It's fantastic.
I just like, you know, is. I got my I wired myself my life, you know, in feelings, in instinct, in a bit of instinct. I think about like things that I do in my life, but at the same time, it's like someone is guiding my life, and I feel it that I have to do, and I do it. I saw that suit, and I was like, man, I'm gonna win this fight, and this is gonna be my important win in my life. So I have to look great. So I just, me and my corners, we spent like 1 hour and a half trying the suit, the perfect size, the perfect everything, you know, especially because I was waiting, kept waiting. So we needed to do the right calculations.
It's beautiful.
And then once we have the whole package, we took the pictures and we just like, that's it. We take this suit, you know, and the winner suit, you know, and that's it. And in one, like, this is my mindset that I have, and I know that in 2020 I'll be world champion. I will have the belt around my waist, and that's a known and for sure fact.
Did you feel as though this one is different? You know, as I said, I felt you should have had more attention after the Crawford win, but does this one feel different? Because it feels different to me. I woke up the next day and your name is everywhere. I see the likes of James Gallagher, Brian Moore, two guys who said they wanted to be in the featherweight tournament. They are now pushing your request forward, saying, let this guy go in. He's the one. Does it feel bigger than the other ones?
Yes, absolutely. Like this fight, for me, feels like this is the beginning of my road, you know. The thing that I, from since kid, I dream about it, you know, to start to make it happen. So this basically is the beginning, you know, was like the big first step to what I'm gonna do it in the future, you know, the big first step of greatness. That's it.
Who would be your ideal opponent? I mean, if you get this place in the featherweight tournament, who would you love to start off against in the first round? Who would you love to face?
I don't have anyone particular.
Come on, Pedro.
Any one of them, you know. I'm be honest. I don't have any particular name, but if there's anyone, like I let the crowd say who they think is the favorite, and once they pick the favorite, they can put against me. It's okay. And then the second favorite, and then the third favorite. I'll fight the favorite until the very end. So in that way, when I get the belt, there's no doubts about it.
That's incredible, man. That would be that. That's so you are ready for all comers. You aren't you are ready to put it all on the line here. You aren't worried about being strategic about who you fight here. You want the best guy first.
Like I think. I'm not gonna even talk about outside of Bellator. Just inside of Bellator, like, you just see my opponent. Like, my first opponent was Daniel Crawford, one of the highest prospects in Europe.
Absolutely,
he was beating every single one by knockout, and I went there and beat him. Then on Italy, I took a fight on 10 days' notice, and I went out there 43 seconds, and now I fought one of the best in the world, one veteran, experienced guy, dangerous guy, and I knock him out. So I think if you see by my opponents that I don't have any problem to fight anyone. That's me, you know, like I'm a fighter, they become an athlete to be a better fighter, you know. These guys are all athletes. They are not fighters. They are athletes. I'm a fighter. That's the difference between me and them. I'm a fighter, you know. And when that cage clocks, we're not gonna. I mean, this is a sport. It is. But in the end of the day, this is a fight. That's why you say, I don't play fight. I fight. Period. So with this being said, I don't mind. This is what I love, to have a scrap. You know, I don't mind to get hurt. I actually like it, you know, but they have to understand that when I go out there, I go with bad intentions, you know, because this is what I love. Once the door is locked, there's no Pedro anymore. That's someone else, and that someone else is there to hurt them, and it doesn't matter who they are. And so with this being said, I don't have problems to fight anyone, I'm a realistic person, you know. I'm not over my head, but I don't see anyone that I say that I have problems to beat. I truly believe that from everyone that possibly going to be on their tournament, I'll beat them all.
does it feel like it's going to happen? You know, when people have a natural intuition, they feel like, you know, this feels like it is going to happen. After the win, after being around the Bellator staff, after being around the media, are you confident that this will happen?
Oh, yes, I am. Good. I am confident, you know. It's just the only thing now, it's the confirmation, the public confirmation, and that's it. Once you see my name on it, you can be sure there in 220, I'll be world champion.
I got to ask you one more thing, Pedro, before you go. I think this is very disrespectful, but several people have said to me that they think you are older than 23 years of age. And I keep telling them, it's because he has a beard. If he shaved off his beard, he would look very young. When people have beards, it makes them look older. You are definitely 23, right?
I'm definitely 23. I born in 8th of June, 1995.
You're going to have to put up a picture of your passport.
You know, like every time someone says that, I just say that I look older, not because of my appearance, but because of my skill set already.
Yes. That's very good. That's very good. And I agree with you after seeing what you did on Saturday night.
Nah, you did. Like I'm a kind of a little veteran, you know, like I trained for 11 years already.
Wow.
I started to compete with 16, and at my time in Portugal, there's no such thing as like juniors or this or that. It was straight away, you want to fight, you go against the big guys. Let's go, you know. So I'm in this game for a few years, you know, already, and I have on my back counting like all kind of combat sports around like 30 or more fights, probably 30, 32, 33, I don't know, but around 30 fights I have already in my back, you know.
It's amazing.
So I've been already in some wars, and so with this being said, it's right now I just feel, especially and especially on my last fight, I felt the first time when I was inside of the cage, like a calm,
yes,
but a good calm, not a bad calm, because most of the times people are like calm, but are like empty. I was like, last time I was like calm, but you know, I was just feeling right there. I was just enjoying the moment. And this one, I was feeling calm and at the same time pumped. You know, I was just enjoying everything. I was just make sure that I was enjoying every single moment, you know. And I heard a kind of a motivation speech of a guy, and I completely agree with him. The lion is the biggest predator, not because he hunts his prey and something, because he absolutely loves the process of the hunting, you know. Yeah. He enjoys the hunt before he even hunt a prey. He enjoys the hunt, and I think that's the main thing. True champions, true greats, guys, they when they go out there, they are not only looking for the finish, you know. They are enjoying the process. The whole thing, they're gonna drive them to the win. They enjoy it, you know. So, and that's it. I just, especially with such a high level as Derek Combs, I just like, I'm gonna take my time, you know. I have cardio to go all day, so that's not a problem. I just gonna take my time, and if the finish have to happen, it will happen, you know. So I just took my time, and here we are talking.
Amazing, amazing. And I must say, we need to get off the phone now, because Pedro is actually going back to training already. It's bank holiday Monday in Ireland, and he is about to head off the training at 12. This is incredible, Pedro. Is this always the way it is, straight back in?
Yes. Yes, sir. Never was anything like different. I mean, when I say I don't take days off, this is my job. This is my life, you know. People don't understand. This is my life, you know. This is what I love to do.
You can at least have a lion on Monday, for God's sake, no?
I took a day off yesterday, you know, Sunday. I didn't do nothing. The only thing that I did yesterday was eating pizza. I think it was already a day off enough.
Okay. That's so at least yeah, it's good that you took some time off. But Pedro, thank you so much for speaking to us. I'm so glad to get to know you finally. We all hope that you get that place in the tournament, because it would be great to see a guy from over here competing with the US guys, especially after what you've already shown you can do to one of the most experienced guys on the roster.
Yes, thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you for getting me here.
No problem. Enjoy training.
Absolute pleasure. I will. I always do.
Okay, Pedro, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And we're back. Now we'll take a look at the weekend's action going forward. It's going to be a busy enough one with both cards. I think they're taking place at the same time. Is that correct? Is both of them taking place on Saturday?
You'd imagine so, yeah. It'd be roughly about the same
time.
So
it's UFC 237 on BT Sport and Bellator 221 on Sky Sports.
And all our American friends, check your listings.
Yes. Don't listen to us whenever we're advising you on this kind of thing. UFC 237, Rose Namajunas v. Jessica Andrade. It reminds me of when Ronda went over to fight Beth Cohea.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was a lot more fanfare around that this time around. Obviously, Rose probably doesn't have that same star power. Ronda being one of the greatest celebrities I think the UFC ever produced. But I have a bad feeling about this one for Rose.
I don't like it either. And I think it's that trip to Brazil, man. People don't really understand what it's like to fight over there until you've actually fought over there. And I think that could be a major, major issue.
She has some serious stopping power as well, Jessica Andrade. Yeah, oh my God.
She's a little beast. And, been lucky enough to cover a couple of her fights in person. And a really likable sort of character as well. A really always a smile on her face. But literally, that smile goes away when she's in the cage. And I think we've seen this sort of, I don't know if it's a facade, but with Rose, with this, you know, blank stare and face and all this when she's on a build-up to fight week. But I feel this is a nasty one for her. I think the atmosphere in Brazil isn't going to do any favours either. Could really unsettle her, man.
But what does it mean if she beats Andrade?
It opens up the division again massively. And I think, you know, Rose has been so dominant in her last couple of outings that I think it would probably be good for the division.
If she won or...
If Andrade won, right. You know, it opens it up. We can.
No, but what if Rose wins? Well, I mean, if she wins in Brazil, I mean...
What more has she got to do, really?
Yeah.
You know, she's beaten, you know, most of the top ladies in that division.
Yes.
And it will be tough. It'll probably cement her legacy as one of the best ever female fighters, because those two performances against Joanna Jędrzejczyk were absolutely phenomenal.
I can remember when we spoke to Joanna on this show a while back, she was saying she doesn't think anyone could fight Jessica Andrade the way she did, and you know it's hard to really argue with her there because she jabbed the face off Andrade.
I agree, and I think you know, we've seen Andrade as well kick on an extra level in her last number of fights. She's really sort of I don't know if she's trained up her camp or whatever, mixed it up, but she's definitely improved. And to, a girl like that to improve as much as she has done and win in the manner in which she did against Karolina Kowalkiewicz, that was phenomenal to spark out such a quality kickboxer and striker like Karolina in the fashion she did. Incredible finish.
Jared Cannonier is riding high off that David Branch win, second round finish of him in his middleweight debut. He's established himself immediately in the rankings, which is pretty crazy when you see that he, you know, coming off two losses at light heavyweight, goes down to middleweight, beats Branch, a former WSOF champion, and now he's fighting Anderson Silva. Cannonier looks ridiculous right now. Like, based on his performance against Branch, he looked unbelievable at the new weight class. But Anderson Silva is Anderson Silva, as we saw against Israel Adesanya recently. What do you think of that fight? Is this the one where we finally see the crown slip from Anderson Silva, like in a dramatic fashion?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's been we've seen it slip.
He's 44 years of age now.
It's pretty much gone, that X factor that he had. Cannonier, yeah, it's a weird one for me. Looked so good against Branch, obviously. Was pretty much dead in that 205-pound division. I think this is probably maybe a step too far. I wouldn't be surprised if Anderson pulled this one out of the bag, man.
He might do it, yeah. He could decision him. Remember, well, Brunson, when you're just stuck in the headlights in front of him, it can happen. But Cannonier seems to have a real impetus when he's in there, so I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see if he can kick on and get some momentum behind him. But yeah, I just fancy Anderson here.
Similar kind of situation with Aldo v. Volkanovski, in that a lot of people are kind of saying, is this the time when, you know, Aldo gives way to a guy who's behind him in the rankings with Alexander Volkanovski? Volkanovski's looked fantastic. I interviewed him very early on in his UFC tenure. I've talked to him a couple of times, but 6 wins so far as a UFC fighter, I believe 5 featherweight. Mizuta Hirata, Shane Young, Jeremy Kennedy, and then the last two, most importantly, Darren Elkins and Chad Mendes. I mean, he finished Mendes in the second round.
It's a great fight.
I mean, unbelievable fight.
And you fancy Alexander here, don't you?
Yeah, I just think the manner in which he fights, he likes to bite down. And,
he's relentless.
And we saw that he's relentless, yeah, totally. And I think that's when he can cause Jose Aldo problems. We saw Max Holloway do it twice. And, you know, he obviously bounced back against Jeremy Stephens and Adam Moicano in incredible fashion, in fairness to him. But I think maybe this is the time for Alexander Volkanovski to shine. A very impressive performer, in my opinion. So it's a really evenly contest, don't get me wrong, but maybe just on what we're looking at in terms of what style the fighters bring, I'm going to fancy Volkanovski here.
What a win that would be for New Zealand again.
What about
it's Eugene Behrman. Eugene Behrman, the City Kickboxing. He's not actually his head coach. There's another guy who looks after Alexander's head coaching duties, but he is very much involved in the camp, and they're having some serious runs at the moment. Thiago Alves and Lorena Staropoli and Francisco Trinaldo v. Carlos Diego Ferreira close out the main card there. There's actually no European interest in this card, but looking enough,
claim someone.
BJ Penn versus Clay Guida. BJ Penn's Irish.
All right.
So, I mean, that's a bit of a mad one, isn't it? BJ Penn competing, and it's not even a whisper about it, really.
Yeah, I think it
does it warrant a whisper?
No.
Like a whisper.
Clay will go through him.
Don't you know?
Clay will go through him here. I think it's just a guy that's hanging on. I think we've seen it for the last number
without
of
a win in nearly 10 years now.
It's sad to see. Doesn't obviously know how to deal with
six straight losses
from the sport. Listen, the UFC have to take responsibility for this as well at times, and I don't think they do enough.
Like, he's not selling any tickets for this event, you know,
100%. And
what are we doing anymore?
What are we doing? Exactly. That is it. What are we doing here? You know, tough to see. Guido all night, man. Guido all night for me.
Yeah, and as we said, no Europeans on the card. Unfortunately, very disappointed with the UFC on that front. Anything else sticking out to you there? There's not really much sticking out to me, to be honest. Nogueira is going to be good to watch. Always is.
Worley Alves and Sergio Moraes is a decent fight there. I always like watching Worley, and Sergio brings it as well.
You know more about this kind of thing than I do. I don't fancy this to break any records in terms of UFC pay-per-views.
100,000.
Yeah, optimistic?
Yeah.
Optimistic 100,000?
Yeah.
I think you're right.
It's just top three fights of the card are the ones sticking out there. Nothing really else. A couple other decent fights. Not good card, listen, not too bad. Francisco Trinaldo will probably bore people to death kicking off the main card. But yeah, it's
good call.
It is. It's not the worst.
Bellator 221 goes down in Rosemont, Illinois. And the big European attraction there is, of course, Michael Venom Page with the most significant test of his life against Douglas Lima. You know, I think back to the Paul Daly fight when I'm looking at this one, Niall, because so many people were saying, if Paul Daly can cause him this much trouble with grappling, Douglas Lima is going to eat him alive. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. How can you not? Mm. Look at Douglas Lima. Look what he's done in Bellator under the banner. Been really, really impressive. And I think it is. It's a step up again. You know, Daly gave him a lot of issues in the deck.
A lara.
And I think Douglas Lima, if we look back, was it the McDonald fight I'm thinking of? Such a closely caught contest, and I think if we look at, you know, grapplers,
and that was pre-Jesus Rory.
Yeah, and I think exactly that's what I mean. Pre-Jesus Rory was the vicious Rory McDonald, and you know, Rory's ground game is so good, and Douglas hung in there with him. So yeah, I think this could be a long night for Michael Venom Page, and I think it could be the time where we finally see him undone in his mixed martial arts career.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but my God, if he wins. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge statement, and I think it's a long overdue statement, PT. He's not getting any younger either, let's be honest about it.
The winner of that fight will go on to fight the winner of Neiman Gracie versus Rory McDonald. Yeah. Rory coming off that win over John Fitch recently. Well, a draw, actually, when he was put through. The main event is very interesting there with Michael Chandler and Patricio Pitbull, a champ v champ fight for the 55 title. Patricio's looked unbelievable lately.
Savage.
And Chandler obviously got his title back against Primus recently enough as well. Interesting fight, that one on the main. Like, I mean, these cards are on at the same time, and there's going to be a lot of people tuning over to watch Michael Page. I guarantee that.
You know, we were just talking about it there. You know, you said you're going to have one on your computer and one on the TV. I'll probably do the same on Saturday night. It's one of those ones where I think you look at the top three fights on both cards, and they're both very appealing to a lot of mixed martial arts fans.
And it doesn't stop there with Bellator 221. As you mentioned earlier, AJ McKeevy, Pat Curran.
It's a great fight.
13-0 now, AJ McKee.
And that's a really good test for him as well, against an experienced vet like Pat Curran. You know, Pat's really good ground game as well. You'd fancy AJ in the feet. It's a really fascinating dynamic, and I think it's a further fight that puts him over well. And I think AJ McKee, man, has just looked phenomenal. And
got that beautiful anaconda choke over Daniel Crawford in his last fight.
In his career, he's just looked fabulous. And I think we're probably looking at a future world champion here.
Curran's coming out into the fight off three straight wins. Emmanuel Sanchez, Georgia Karakian, and John Massapa. So good victories there. Obviously, he's fell to Daniel Vichel and Patricio Pitbull recently. Daniel Strauss, another man who's beaten him under the Bellator banner. And, of course, Eddie Alvarez. But that's very top drawer. Fighters, but I don't think anyone's doubting that AJ McKee is a top drawers fighter now. I think we all know much.
I think that's been established.
But this is a good step up. You're happy with it?
Yeah, very, very good step up. And I think when you're beating a guy like Pat Kern, if he beats him, it's a further statement and it enhances his reputation, definitely.
Jack Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, Jake Hager, should I say, takes on TJ Jones 1-1-0 against 1-0. I think he'll deal with him handily based on his debut. He was very impressive at wrestling and had the submission skills as well, which
he saw. He was great.
And then after that, we go into the wilderness, unfortunately.
Oscar might be an interesting one.
He's no Oscar Askarov of ACB fame. ACA, should I say now?
Yeah, I don't know, really, to be honest. I don't know an awful lot about a lot of the guys further down in the card there.
He's been fighting on Titan FC, he's been fighting on LFA. Look, I'm interested in the main card, to be honest with you guys. I don't really have anything jumping out at me when I'm looking down at these preliminaries. So two good cards there. Going to be interesting to see what happens. Going to your head, Chandler v. Pitbull. Who do you pick?
Pitbull.
Do you? Yeah.
Recent form.
Yeah, and he does seem to be like
Chandler's very inconsistent, man. Even for I know he was a champion for a while, but he has these tendencies to be a little bit sloppy at times, and I think Pitbull might take advantage here.
Sloppy. I'll make him extra sloppy for you.
I'd love to see Chandler in the UFC though, still.
Right, so on to our final interview of the evening. We talked to Marvin Vettori, the Italian Dream, who has just been confirmed his USADA suspension for Osterin. He obviously is in with Sean O'Malley, Nico Montano, Augusto Mendez, with USADA coming back and saying there was no signs of intentional use. A very tough period for all of these fighters. I saw Sean O'Malley talking about his frustrations. Augusto Mendez is nearly bankrupting himself trying to prove his innocence. And next of all, here it is. Oh, well, you know, you guys didn't intentionally use this. It's a tough break. Vettori is only 25 years of age. He's been off for over a year since that loss to Stoilbender. And just look what happened to Stoilbender's career in that time away. It's incredible. He's had fight offers for Tim Bosch, for Andrew Sanchez, and for Jared Cannonier since he's been on the sidelines. He hasn't been able to take any of those fights. So he takes on Cesar Mutante on July 13th. So we got his take on this whole situation, how he ended up in Kings MMA from Italy, and what his plan is going forward. And he also had some words for Elias Teodoro. He wasn't all that impressed with that performance, and he recounted an old sparring story from back in the day. So
I blame him.
Good time talking to Marvin. I thought he'd be named after Marvelous Marvin Hagler because he's a middleweight, and Marvin Hagler moved to Italy all those years ago, but turns out, no, nothing to do with that.
All right.
Well, there you go.
Cool.
I thought I would have a lovely little bit there on his Marvin being named after Marvin Hagler, but it didn't happen. These things happen. But great to speak to Marvin. This is quite a long one because we had a lot to get through, so we'll see you in about 25-30 minutes. MMAfighting.com, and I am joined none other by the Italian Dream himself, Marvin Vettori. Marvin, you have this big fight coming up with Cesar Ferreira in July. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good. I'm very happy to be back and very excited to do this interview.
I got to ask you, right? How does a guy from Italy end up in California training with Rafael Cadero? That is a question I often wonder when I see your career.
Yeah, it's my career has always been like my training career has always been all over the places. So at first, when I first started MMA, there wasn't that much in Italy, you know. So after I stayed there for like a couple of years, I decided that if I wanted to make MMA my life, then I had to move to take it to the next level. And at first, obviously, I couldn't go right to California because it's the other side of the world. And I was just getting out of high school. And so at first, I decided to move in London. And I trained a London Street Fighter for 2 years. And I stayed there, trained and worked there. And then I went back to Italy for like another 6 months. And then it happened that one time I came here for a week. Actually, I was still in London, and I came here for a week for the Nogi Worlds to do the competition for the IBJJF Nogi Worlds. And we were doing a week at the Cobrinha Academy, Jiu-Jitsu Academy. And I met Babalu there, Renato Sobral.
Wow.
Babalu. And then so we kind of like got along because he was showing some wrestling technique, and he used me as a partner to show wrestling technique. And so, and then we were talking about, I was like, oh, I'm doing MMA and I'm doing this and that. And he's like, oh, listen, if you actually want to do MMA, the place to be is King's MMA. And so then I went back to London, and then I moved back to Italy. And then I did 3 fights there and in Italy, and I won all of them. And then I had a fight against Jack Mason. And for that fight, I'm like, oh, you know, like this guy is very solid. I might need like a proper camp. And so I remember, like, I mean, I knew I talked to Babalu, and I'm like, they told me like King of MMA is a very good spot to go to be. And so then so that's why I first did the first camp here, and I got here. It was kind of weird that time because I came here. I thought I had a place to stay, then I ended up not having one, and then I had to find some. But the first couple of days are kind of rough.
Were you homeless?
I was homeless, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's and then I was,
but then luckily a friend of mine, and then after became a friend of mine, took me on his, me and my friend, because we both came here his name is Jason Melly, and we stayed at his place for like 3 months, and so I was training with him, because Jason Melly is actually like a Cesar Gracie black belt.
Wow.
And so I was training with him, and then going to King's. And that's how I did my first camp over here. And then since then, I just I kept doing camps back and forth from Italy to here. And then about 2 years and a half ago, I decided to move here.
And it must have been an incredible risk, because you're so young, right? You're only 25 years of age.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, one thing, even though I knew that the circumstances were in the, I mean, you know, I don't want to complain, but obviously, like, you know, wanting to do MMA at the highest level, and being born in a 5,000 people village in the north of Italy is not the best circumstances, but at the same time, it made me very hungry, and so I knew I didn't have any time to waste, you know, like, and so. I mean, I always had to work to get the work. That's what when they ask me, it's always like, I always say this, I always have to work a lot to get the work. And that made me understand that I can't waste any time, because it might already take more time than what it should have taken, because obviously nothing, training wasn't, I couldn't get to train at a good level easily. And so that's why I was, I'm like, yeah, man, I have to do everything in the smartest way that I can.
Yes, and it seems like that is working out for you. But of course, we haven't seen you in action now since April of last year when you fought Stylebender. It has been announced in the last couple of weeks that, you know, you got a ban from USADA, but they've said that, you know, there is no signs of any intentional use. I mean, you were very honest about this. You came out, you told the fans from the beginning what the story was. But how frustrating has this been for you? Because I've seen other guys like Sean O'Malley, I've seen Augusto Mendez talk about how frustrating and disappointing it's been having to wait this long to find out what's been happening.
Yeah, it's been crazy. It's been kind of crazy, because everything happened so quick, because in this whole year, basically, that I was out of fighting, I mean, the suspension was 6 months, but then after my last fight, I took like 6 weeks off, because I had some injuries that I was dragging with me. So then I started going back to training, and then this thing happened. So altogether, when I'm going to go back to fighting, it's going to be more than a year, basically, that I'm off. But obviously, I would have never expected anything like that. And everything was kind of crazy because in this whole period, I never knew, I could never make a plan for myself because everything started right away. And then the situation was always very weird. And even Uzad and Jeff Nowinski were like, Jeff Nowinski from the beginning was like, listen, your case is kind of weird because I believe you because it's like you, the level is so low and, you know, this is the first test that you actually like found, you've been found positive. And then osterin is a weird substance and it can happen to be in a lot of supplements. And, you know, you don't seem like the guy that cheats at all and things like that. And I'm like, yeah, definitely. I don't know. I just like, I went to check what it was, osterin. I actually never heard of it before. And yeah, and I'm like, oh, it's a substance to get big and like to get ripped. I'm like, what? I mean, there's no, like, I never wanted to get big in my whole life, but I can't wait. Yeah. If something, I get big too easily. So, yeah, but like I said, so, and since the case was weird, and since they had things going on about cases like osterin, and since they had a lot of cases pending for osterin, like 5 or 6, they were like, we are kind of like ruling this kind of like situation. So in the meanwhile, we don't want to give you a time because the rule that we're gonna do or like the meeting that we're gonna have might generate some rule and they're gonna affect your case, and so you're basically on a hold for now. You're just on a hold, and we're not gonna tell you anything because if we do give you like a time to do, then you know it might be more because it doesn't matter which kind of substance, doesn't matter anything. At the end of the day, if you're not able to prove where it's from, normally it's always 2 years. Doesn't matter, you know. So I was like, absolutely, like you know, this is a very weird and unfair situation from my side. So I'd rather wait, no matter what. And so I was on a hold, and I didn't know. 1 month, 2 months, they told me like, oh, in a couple of months we're gonna know. But then they shifted back another couple of months, and then they shifted back another couple of months. And then finally they told me, oh, at this point we're going to tell you. But I was like, it's going to be another time where they're going to tell me, like, oh, we're going to shoot you back another couple of months. But then actually this time they told me and I was so happy. But what I always told myself in this period, I'm like, even more because I was in a hold, I'm like, you know, a fight can maybe happen soon in a way, you know, even – this can happen easily to be sold, and then I might have a fight in 6-7 weeks. And even then, obviously, I'm not gonna take time all this time off. And just you know, I gotta keep stay focused and keep training and get better and use this kind of like a like see the positive way and like keep training. But and so that's what I did. I just trained a lot and just got better. I feel like I'm a different guy, completely different fighter right now, mentally and physically. Under every aspect of fighting, I'm different, and I'll show it. And in my next fight, I'm so much better.
Is it? Do you feel exonerated now? Do you feel like everybody knows that this was accidental? Do you feel like, as I saw, you know, trolls on the internet, they always tried to chip away at you guys. Do you feel now everybody knows that this was an accidental case? It's a very small amount. Do you feel vindicated because USADA have said that now?
I feel like most of the people feel right about this, like know that I haven't done it. But then I feel like other people won't because they're just too lazy to get informed. And at the same time, some people are just, you know, out there in the internet, they're just a lot of people that are just there to hate. They call them haters for a reason. And you know, they now they have this, but maybe they could have found something else anyway before that, so I'm not really worried about those, because, you know, if there wasn't this reason to do it, then they would have another one. So
yes, very true.
So at the end of the day, I mean, I think that people that actually look into it and give, like, I'm not saying a lot, give like 30 minutes, like not even 15 minutes.
Just read the first paragraph, the very first paragraph. Yes. It says it.
Yeah. They understand that the case was that I haven't do it like voluntarily, definitely. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can't really give too much attention to what other people think.
Absolutely.
Do you know
if this came from a supplement? You mentioned earlier that Ostarine, it seems to be in a lot of supplements. Do you know if that's the case, that it did come from a tainted supplement?
Well, I tested a few. And I tested like five or six supplements. And I honestly, like I said, even back then, I wasn't even taking that many supplements. I was just taking like protein and some amino acid here and there. But even like, I didn't have a fight coming up. And, you know, I don't even take that many supplements. So I honestly don't know. Like, this is one thing that I would really like to know. But I think it will come down in the tumble with me. Because I wasn't able to find it, and we tried, but I don't know. I heard Austrian came from the weirdest places sometimes. Like I heard like one time was a case where they found it in shampoo, like, or like, wow, even food, or like,
what the
yeah,
hell?
It's very weird. So I literally don't know.
Yes, it's a crazy situation.
Yeah. Honestly, like, before I was always being careful, but now I'm paranoid, and I'm even, this is in a way, I mean, and at the end of the, like, a lot of times, you really have to happen to understand it, because I speak to a lot of other UFC fighters, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm careful, but then I see they're not as careful, like, they're careful as I was me before, as I yes. was, as I was before. And I've tried to tell him, especially a friend of mine, I'm trying to tell him, like, look, this is actually not enough careful. Like, this, like, you actually have to be paranoid in a way. Like, you know, you have to check everything. You really have to know exactly what. I'm actually paranoid about, even extra paranoid. Like, even like now I'm eating meat and I'm like, you know, I'm tripping. Like, I'm.
It's great. So, I heard John Jones speaking about it as well, where he was like, if someone buys him a drink, he can't trust that the drink, like, he has to see where all of his beverages come from. He has to see, you know, even guys like Junior Dos Santos have said in the past, since this came in, the USADA thing, they don't use any supplements. They literally just stick to food, as much food as they possibly can.
Yeah. But, you know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I hope this is for example for other people, because it is crazy, because now the machines of testing are so sensitive that, you know, they can go down to basically, to picogram, which is like 12, no, more than that. Like, it's one thousand billions. Yeah, it's like one fraction, 1,000 billions, basically, of a gram. They can go down to see if there's anything. It's basically like 12 zero, no, more than that, 12 or 13 zero after the point.
That's crazy. That's very, very sensitive.
Grand, yeah. So
it must feel good to have this fight lined up, Marvin. It must be very, definitely, very good for you. Like, I mean, when you get that contract and when you sign it, how good do you feel? As you say, you feel like you're a whole new fighter now, but it must feel so good to have that target in front of you to gear your life towards now.
Yeah, exactly. It was it's a long time coming. I was ready, and I'm like, I just gotta, you know, accepting something that is unfair makes you very strong, you know, because you just have to accept the consequences and just keep going with it, and just know that doesn't matter what happens, you're gonna keep training and you're gonna keep getting better, and you're gonna make sure the next opportunities that you will have, you're gonna make the most of them. So that's what I did, it was a long time coming. I'm like, as soon as I was like, I'm actually ready in 4 weeks, 5 weeks, if you want to give me a fight earlier. But then Yeah, but then they told me 13th of July and same card as my teammate Benil Dariush. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Let's take that. And but yeah, I'm very ready. I could fight in 3-4 weeks if I wanted to. But it's all right. Like, I mean, you know, I was like, at the same time, I was like, there's no point to rush it. Like, a month now, and I've been training for this last year, and you know, a month is not gonna change anything. And I feel like I found a way to train, keep getting better, and not overtrain myself and get injured, and at the same time, like, I learned a lot about myself too. Like, you know, like, a lot of times you go right away from a fight to another fight, and you're always in a camp, and you always want to overtrain sometimes, and then you kind of hate the last 4 or 5 weeks. You kind of like everything, because I never stopped training really, but you know, like, and that's why even when I get to a camp, sometimes I feel like, I don't know, like, sometimes I'm 4 or 5 weeks out, and actually I would like to have the fight even before that, but I still have 4 or 5 weeks of hard training, and I start kind of like hating that process.
Yes.
Meanwhile, now I understand to just keep getting better, keep getting, like, staying focused, but at the same time, not being ready before time. And so, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And obviously, there is still a while to my fight, but like I said, I'm not worried, because I know I'm not going to overtrain myself, and I know I'm gonna picking it up as the fight come closer.
I was listening to an interview you did with James Lynch back in February, and I mean, you've missed out on some big opportunities here. You had you told James that opportunities like short notice call ups against Tim Bosch, Andrew Sanchez, and Jared Cannonier. I mean, these fights would have been massive opportunities for you. Is it hard to look back on those things, that maybe you could have fought them times apart from the situation with USADA?
No, honestly, it's all right, because honestly, in this year too, one thing I learned, I'm not going to be the most patient guy, but like, I learned to be more patient than what I was. And I know things will come, because I'm just better than these guys, than all these guys. And Andrew Sanchez and Tim Bosch didn't want to fight me, so that wouldn't happen anyway, because
yes,
Andrew
Sanchez,
I accepted a fight in 3 weeks' notice. I called him out too. He didn't even say nothing. The guy probably doesn't even want to watch me in the eyes when I see him. I don't think he want any of me. And Tim Bosch, Tim Bosch, same thing, like, he didn't want to fight me. And then Jared Cannonier would have been crazy, because if you think about it, like, I thought about it, like, it's like, if we were about to fight Jared Cannonier, and then we both signed. I think, I don't know if he signed, but I was very close to signing, or I think I actually signed for Jared Cannonier. But I mean, it wasn't the discussion, and he was very close to be, I think it wasn't on a losing streak, and I think if he would have lost against me, maybe he would have got, I don't know, like, you know, he wouldn't have done good. It wouldn't have been good for him. But then he went and fought Devin Branch, and he actually won. So from, like, being close to, I don't know, because you never know about the UFC.
Yes, absolutely.
But, like, from a losing streak, it went to top 10 right away. If I would have beat him, that wouldn't have meant almost anything, because he was on a losing streak.
Yes.
And he was a, you know, so that was actually, that would have probably been a good fight, but it wouldn't have meant much for me. But at the end of the day, like, there's so many of these weird situations in the UFC that if you're good, you got to beat anybody. And that's it. It's just a matter of time until you get to the top.
You know,
some people have it easier. Some people have kind of like an easier way, and some other, like, they have to go through anybody. But at the end of the day, I'm not here to have any easy way. I honestly, I'm ready for anyone, and with the right preparation, I can fight anybody. So right now, I don't worry about the past. It's past is past. And at the end of the day, this last year made me the fighter that I am today, and so much stronger mentally and physically that let's say now I'm gonna take back anything that I missed, you know.
Do you feel like it's a bad time for Cesar Ferreira to be facing you after this year on the sidelines, after all these improvements? Do you feel like, you know, you're like a caged animal almost? You need to get in there and have that outlet that you've been missing for the last year.
But the thing is, like, I think it would have been a bad time for anybody to face me right now. It's not just enough for just Cesar, you know. Anybody that was facing me now is a bad time for them. So, so it's... So it is what it is. We gotta, you know, we're fighters. We gotta pick. Some people pick fights. I don't. And you know, for calling yourself a fighter, I think you shouldn't pick fights. So they gave him this fight and he accepted it. And if it's good enough for him, this is none of my business.
I gotta ask you. I follow you on Instagram, and I noticed last night. It didn't seem like you were very impressed with Elias Teodoro's performance. Did I pick that up wrong?
Oh, man. That's man, like, so don't get me wrong. People are like, oh, the guy is 17-2 and 17-3. Like, I don't know how, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, and this I will actually say a fun fact about this. I'm like, the guy win fights because, you know, it's not that. You seem like that. He looks like. He can fight. He actually, you know, as an MMA fighter, he has some skills. Like, you know, he's a big dude. He's probably decently strong, and he's awkward as hell. No, he has some, not high level, but he has some wrestling, and he has cardio, and he's kind of awkward, very awkward, you know, but. He has nothing that I like in a fighter, you know. So he's so bad, like he's so bad. At first, he's very like he's very ugly to watch as a fighter, even as a fan watching a fight. This is tremendously ugly. And then I don't think he has a lot of like heart in a way, you know, to kind of like dig deep when after a scramble or something like that, you know, to push through tiredness, and he's striking is horrible. It just kicks and run, and it's just ugly, man. It's just, but you know, like if I would ever fight him, I would have underestimated him. But as me watching it is awkward. Like I kept saying when I was there, like my eyes are about to bleed right now. My eyes are about to bleed. I can't see this. I'm like, these guys throwing like. Wing Chun things, like I don't even know, like he's like throwing like punches from upside down and then vice versa, and then he's just kicking and running, and then he's getting taken down, and it's just awkward. And then the way he moves, like you know, like I was like, give yourself some respect, like I don't like have some pride on yourself, like he was walking like he's just dragging himself around, like at least like show, like make it look like you're not that tired, like you're looking like shit right now, like.
Wow.
So
that's some damning statement right there, Marvin.
What?
Big statement.
Oh, I mean, like, you know, I'm whatever, like
maybe if you get Cesar,
something could I feel something. Like people around me, my friends, they always say one thing about me. I appreciate you because I know you say the truth. You say what you think, you know, you don't filter it that much. Well, I filter it because I don't, you know, if they're my friends and I want to say something that they might not want to hear in a way, I might try to make it.
Soften it up.
soften it a little bit, but I still say it, you know, but they appreciate me because.
I appreciate it too.
And some people, a lot of people around you don't say the truth in your face. So. That's what I felt yesterday watching his fights. But like I said, he's a very ugly fighter to watch, and he doesn't have any skill that I like to see in a fighter. But I wouldn't underestimate him if I would ever fight him because I know. I mean, I think it would be a very good fight for me. But
would you like that fight if you get through Cesar? Would you enjoy? Because he is in the rankings, right?
Yeah, I could like that fight. I mean, like he's in top 15. I can crack top 15, beating him up, and I would like that fight. So I think it would have been a good fight, but at the same time, like I said, I wouldn't underestimate him because I know he's strong. He's physically he looks like kind of strong. He's big and he has cardio and he has some wrestling. But other than that, I don't like him as a fighter. And that's a fun fact too. This is actually my first camp. When I was here and I stayed with Jason Melly for the first 3 months here in California.
For the Venator Fight.
He actually showed up at the gym one time. He actually showed up at that gym one time I was at. And because he, at the time, I think he was having a little beef with Raya Hall. And they were talking shit about each other or something. Actually, he was talking shit about Raya Hall and not really Raya Hall back. Raya Hall wasn't saying much, honestly. But he was talking shit to Raya Hall and Raya Hall was there too. And so he showed up at the gym, and he just had like a couple of fights in the UFC. He didn't have that many fights, but so him and Raya Hall roll, and he was talking shit about like Raya Hall ground, and then they rolled, and Raya Hall taps him in a jiu-jitsu roll. And then I go, and I was a 170er back then still.
Right.
And I'm not, and that's like 4 or 5 years ago. I wasn't even the same fighter that I was now. And I actually, we sparred 3-5, me against him. And he was big at the time. I remember he probably was like 215 pounds at least. He had like 25 pounds on me or something. Probably like 20 pounds, yeah. And we sport 3-5, and man, I'm like, and I didn't know him before, like I didn't see any of his fights before, and but there I was like, man, this guy is so awkward. Like I sparred him, and he just kept running, even I was the smaller guy, and I kept going forward, I using my box, and he just kept running. So this 3-5, and then. Yeah, and he tried to take me down and stuff, and a couple of times, I didn't know, but he got in with one idea and he got out with another idea, you know, like Ray Hall, like he was talking shit about Ray Hall Brown and he got actually tapped, and then I'm a 170er there, I'm really, you know, nobody knew my name, and he kind of like, he didn't do shit to me too, you know.
I got, thank you so much for your time, by the way, Marvin, but I've got one more question. And I was wondering this because my dad is a huge boxing fan, and for years he told me that Marvin Hagler moved to Italy, and he had a very famous career there. I was wondering, are you named after Marvin Hagler? Is there any?
I wasn't named after, but I'm happy that I have the same name.
Yes, it's a cool name for a middleweight.
He lives in Milan. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And do you get home often?
Yeah. Every 3-4 months, I try to go home, and depending on the fights, most of the time. But Italy is still my home.
Beautiful place.
100% Italian for sure.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place. One of my great friends is Italian. His name is Daniel Sansovini. I believe he's from Naples or Rome. So
he will be
happy to hear that I've talked to you now.
Nice. Yeah. Like a lot of people here in America, they have the stereotype from southern Italian or from Sicily, you know. And yes. I don't look Italian in general, but you know, it's harder to see people from very up in the north where I'm from that immigrate, you know, like go somewhere else. So it's just to say that normally, you know, when they think about Italian, they think darker skin and things like that. But
I think you pull it off, though. It's looking good. It's looking good. Don't worry about that, my friend. But
no, I'm fine.
But Marvin, thank you so much for your time today. I can't wait to see you back in there. And I hope we get this Elias Teodoro fight set up after Cesar Mutant.
Options over there. Like I said, I'm not worried. Like anybody, it's okay. I said even to my manager, my coach, you pick the fight for me, and I trust you. That's it. I don't even want to see you. You just tell me this fight, all right? And I'll sign it. So it's fine.
Brilliant.
Definitely.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Marvin.
Thank you.
All the best. Bye bye. Thank you very much to the Italian Dream, Marvin Vettori, for speaking to us there. Very interesting. Must be very frustrating to be in that situation. You can tell he still really likes USADA being there, but it's a tough, tough situation. I heard the same with Augusto Mendez speaking about this. I think Augusto Mendez spent tens of thousands trying to prove his innocence, only to find out that USADA come back with unintentional use. It's tough. Very, very sensitive and a whole new thing for UFC fighters to be dealing with. I certainly wouldn't consider Vettori or O'Malley in the same box as I'd put TJ Dillashaw, would you?
Not at all.
Like, I mean, and this has happened quite a bit. Toysimov as well in this kind of situation.
Yes, similar sort of situation.
Tests are getting more and more sensitive, man.
And I think that's where we have to go back again to, you know, updating of the banned substance list. I think it's a bit big issue, which doesn't seem to have been resolved a lot since Jeff Novitzky's get. They were going to make a concerted effort to update that list on a more regular basis. And I think that's a major issue, because the fighters need to be more informed by USADA.
They need to have a cooling period as well. Exactly. If there is a new thing introduced, like, I mean, they can only deal with so much stuff. And if you're adding something else to that, who's to say it's not in something?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, it's not like these guys are like jabbing syringes into themselves every week. This is coming up in proteins.
There's a massive lack of communication between USADA and the fighters on a direct basis in relation to that. And I think, you know, they're the first ones to jump on the fucking, jump on the stage and start pointing fingers if, you know, a guy isn't somewhere if they don't check into their app that the fighters have. So I think, you know, it needs to be a little bit more transparent and the communication needs to be better.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. That kind of wraps up the MMA for this week. But how are you? You haven't watched Game of Thrones yet?
No, I'm going to watch it now in a while.
Do you know people think that that
season of shit?
No, people think that people who think the season are shit are like the new vegan. That you have to tell everyone that's how you feel and... You know, it's kind of like you're like, oh yeah, well, I was there from the start. So,
listen,
I mean,
dickhead,
I think it's great, and like, you know, you guys don't know. I know dragons.
I don't give a fuck.
You don't know dragons.
Fuck dragons.
Look at him. He loves dragons.
No, I'm not saying that. I don't listen. I call it how I think it is. I'm pretty much like that, and I don't give a fuck.
Pretty much.
If I see some shit online, people going, oh, you know, don't watch it if you don't like it. No, I watch what I fucking want. Don't tell me what I can and can't watch. I just don't think it's as good as previous seasons.
That's, I think you're just watching it to have that line.
I'm not, man. I had to turn on a torch last week to bloody watch the fucking thing.
That was tough.
It was. Thank you.
Especially when you're not watching it in HBO quality, let's say.
Well, he's down over the north side anyway.
But I'll tell you what. Stop fucking ruining it. All these people. Do you know last week's episode, I won't get into it. There's a big climatic moment there. Everybody was talking about it. I hadn't seen the episode yet. I went on Twitter straight away. Yeah. Image of it.
Yeah, it's annoying because it's on at 2 a.m.
Stop
here.
Being pissants.
It's on at 2 a.m. here, so I think people should stay off fucking line.
Yeah, shut the...
until
seriously.
The next day. Till the Monday... say Monday night.
People are like, oh, block the Game of Thrones hashtag. Shut the fuck. I'm not fucking doing that.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
I don't even know how to do that, okay? So just watch your P's and Q's. You're 30-odd years of age. Stop tweeting about what happened on a bleeding TV show, you pricks.
Yeah, no, I think there's more pressing issues in the world of sport, though. Like Liverpool are very much worrying me now about winning this Premier League title after that Newcastle win at the weekend. Didn't deserve it either, which is even more worrying. 3-2. Oh no, it's been a horrid season.
But City are playing tonight, right?
Yeah. So I hope City win.
Who are they playing?
Playing Leicester, which is a tough game.
Oh shit, yeah.
So man, the football, I just want it to end now. After yesterday's well, spineless from Pogba and the boys yesterday. Just spineless. I don't know what to say.
Jesus Christ.
That's what it is. It was absolutely pathetic, appalling performance. No Champions
League.
You love
the old towns, don't you?
Let's be honest, a lot of these millennial type footballers are, you know, a manager shouts at them, they want to cry in a corner and sulk like a little child. It's just the way sport's gone. You can't say anything to anyone anymore. It's very upsetting. You need figures like Roy Keane. You need the Gary Nevilles, the Scholes, these guys like those back. It's football is really sad in the last few years.
Don't know why
you bother
at all.
Yeah, look at the money the guys are getting as well. Overpaid little mercenaries is all our millennials. Get out of here.
Is every week a bank holiday now?
No, listen, just appreciate that because we don't get a lot of them, Petey. And we've had two, you know, in quick succession. But
back to back.
there is quite long periods here where we don't get one and you're craving for one. So
it makes absolutely no difference to my life.
Yeah, it doesn't really either to me. I work most weekends.
Every fucking day. It doesn't really. I just know because Elaine's still at home that it's a bank holiday. Yeah, where aren't you on work? I'm a bank. All right.
Same as me. Fuck all difference.
What's this? Have you watched this? These Avengers films?
Nah, I wouldn't be into that.
I'm not into it either, but all that shit about that new film has made me want to go and watch every one of them. So I googled how many of them there are. There are 22 of the fucking thing.
That's what's ridiculous.
That's like going to take me 2 years to do. Like.
Yeah, and I've probably watched about two of them.
I've never seen any of them.
Probably.
Yeah, I saw Black Panther actually. It was really good.
Yeah, you probably. It's not my cup of tea, really. I'm a big film guy, but I'm very selective. I'm a fussy little girl about films. Like Game of Thrones is sort of a push for me even to watch it, and I very much enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, but like I wouldn't be into the Dungeons and Dragons kind of shit in general.
It's the only thing I watched, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I don't really watch, like honestly, I love documentaries, as you know. I love sort of your classic films. I love war films. Good Boys in the Hood, like Shoot Up, something like that. But yeah, in general, I just, man, it's fucking sports, my life. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Consumed by the realms of sport and mixed martial arts.
Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible, horrible existence.
Sport's horrible.
It's tough. Yeah,
don't I guess get into media, motherfuckers. That's all my advice for you.
That's all we've got for you. You know,
there's a real game now, Petey. On the
darts, I love darts.
Darts is great.
I have to make sure my car is still working so I can get home again.
Yeah, you had a bit of a flat coming over.
Oh, man. I'm going to die in that car. I want to say it on the record now. I will die in that car.
No, you won't.
I know I will. And people remember this moment. And
don't say that.
I'm telling you.
We don't. I don't
remember this moment. I told you. I've seen it in the future.
This podcast won't go out tomorrow.
I'm like Tupac.
Did you see that about Tupac? I was chatting with Jono there yesterday.
Did you see that about Tupac? The lad's been dead for 20 odd years.
Yeah, but you know Suge Knight's son. Have you seen his son? He's like a record producer. Suge's obviously in jail. Suge's son has been going out and chatting to TMZ and shit and going, oh, I'm going to unveil Tupac. He's been living in like the Caribbean and Zaire and shit like that. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy on? Is this guy for real?
No, he's not for real. Because he's dead.
Suge's son, though. We should have known better.
Yeah. I mean, unless it's a story about hanging Vanilla Ice by his ankles off a balcony. Yeah, I'm not really interested in anything else. That's all I want to hear.
Hell. Oh, jeez.
So that's all we have for you, folks. We love yous loads.
No, we don't. So
take care of yourselves. It's a lonely place out there.
Jesus Christ.
Look, love yous loads. See yous next week.